Chapter 1. The Riverbank.
Mole had been working very hard all morning, spring cleaning her little home. First with brooms, then with dusters. Then on ladders and steps and chairs with a brush and a pail of whitewash. Till she had dust in her throat and eyes and splashes of whitewash all over her black fur and an aching back. And weary arms. Spring was moving in the air above and in the earth below and around her, penetrating even her dark and lowly little house with its spirit of divine discontent and longing. It was small wonder then that, upon seeing an abandoned pair of Mr. Mole's boots in the corner, she suddenly flung down her brush on the floor, said,
"Bother!"
And,
"Oh, blow."
And also,
"Hang spring cleaning."
And bolted out of the house without even waiting to put on her coat. Something up above was calling her insistently, and she made for the steep little tunnel, which answered in her case to the gravelled carriage drive owned by animals whose residences are nearer to the sun and air. So she scraped and scratched and scrabbled and scrooged, and then scrooged again, and scrabbled, and scratched, and scraped, working busily with her little paws, and muttering to herself,
"Up we go, up we go."
Till at last, pop, her snout came out into the sunlight, and she found herself rolling in the warm grass of a great meadow.
"This is fine,"
she said to herself.
"This is better than whitewashing."
The sunshine struck hot on her fur. Soft breezes caressed her heated brow. And after the seclusion of the cellarage she had lived in so long, the carol of happy birds fell on her dulled hearing almost like a shout. Jumping off all her four legs at once, in the joy of living and the delight of spring without its cleaning, she pursued her way across the meadow till she reached the hedge on the further side.
"Hold up,"
said an elderly rabbit at the gap.
"Sixpence for the privilege of passing by the private road."
He was disregarded by the emboldened and unwavering mole, who trotted along the side of the hedge, chafing the other rabbits as they peeped hurriedly from their holes to see what the row was about.
"Onion sauce, onion sauce,"
she remarked jeeringly, and was gone before they could think of a thoroughly satisfactory reply. Then they all started grumbling at each other.
"How stupid you are! Why didn't you tell her?" "Well, why didn't you say? You might have reminded her."
And so on, in the usual way. But of course, it was then much too late, as is always the case. It all seemed too good to be true. Hither and thither, through the meadows, she rambled busily, along the hedgerows, across the copses, finding everywhere birds building, flowers budding, leaves thrusting, everything happy and progressive and occupied. And instead of having an uneasy conscience pricking her and whispering,
"Whitewash,"
she somehow could only feel how jolly it was to be the only idler among all these busy citizens. After all, the best part of a holiday is perhaps not so much to be resting yourself as to see all the other unfortunates busy working. She thought her happiness was complete when, as she meandered aimlessly along, suddenly she stood by the edge of a full-fed river. Never in her life had she seen a river before. This sleek, sinuous, full-bodied animal, chasing and chuckling, gripping things with a gurgle, and leaving them with a laugh, to fling itself on fresh playmates that shook themselves free, and were caught and held again. All was a shake and a shiver, glints and gleams and sparkles, rustle and swirl, chatter and bubble. Mole was bewitched, entranced, fascinated. By the side of the river she trotted as one trots, when very small, by the side of a grown-up who holds one spellbound by exciting stories. And when tired at last, she sat on the bank, while the river still chattered on to her, a babbling procession of the best stories in the world, sent from the heart of the earth to be told at last to the insatiable sea. As she sat on the grass and looked across the river, a dark hole in the bank opposite, just above the water's edge, caught her eye. And dreamily, she fell to considering what a nice, snug dwelling place it would make for an animal with few wants and fond of a bijou riverside residence, above flood level and remote from noise and dust. As she gazed, something bright and small seemed to twinkle down in the heart of it, vanished, then twinkled once more like a tiny star. But it could hardly be a star in such an unlikely situation, and it was too glittering and small for a glowworm. Then, as she looked, it winked at her, and so declared itself to be an eye, and a small face began gradually to grow up round it, like a frame round a picture. A brown little face with whiskers. An intelligent round face with the same twinkle in its eye that had first attracted Mole's notice. Small neat ears and thick silky hair. It was a water rat. Then the two animals stood and regarded each other cautiously.
"Hello, Miss Mole," said the water rat.
Mole, having removed her small gold band for spring cleaning, didn't trouble to correct her new acquaintance.
"Hello, Miss Rat,"
said Mole.
"Would you like to come over?"
inquired Rat presently.
"Oh, it's all very well to talk,"
said Mole, rather pettishly, she being new to a river and riverside life and its ways. Rat said nothing, but she stooped and unfastened a rope and hauled on it, then lightly stepped into a little boat, which the mole had not observed. It was painted blue outside and white within, and was just the size for two animals, and Mole's whole heart went out to it at once, even though she did not yet fully understand its uses. Rat sculled smartly across and made fast. Then she held up her forepaw as Mole stepped gingerly down.
"Lean on that,"
she said.
"Now then, step lively."
And Mole, to her surprise and rapture, found herself actually seated in the stern of a real boat.
"Oh, this has been a wonderful day,"
she said, as Rat shoved off and took to the sculls again.
"Do you know, I've never been in a boat before in all my life."
"What?"
cried Rat, open-mouthed.
"Never been in a... You never... Well, I... What have you been doing then?"
"Is it so nice as all that?"
asked Mole, shyly, though she was quite prepared to believe it, as she leant back in her seat and surveyed the cushions, the oars, the rowlocks, and all the fascinating fittings, and felt the boat sway lightly under her.
"Nice? Oh, it's the only thing,"
said the water rat solemnly, as she leant forward for her stroke.
"Believe me, my dear, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, half so much worth doing as simply messing about in boats. Simply messing,"
she went on dreamily.
"Messing about in boats, messing..."
"Look ahead, Rat!"
cried Mole suddenly. It was too late. The boat struck the bank full tilt. The dreamer, the joyous oarswoman, lay on her back at the bottom of the boat, her heels in the air.
"About, in boats, or with boats,"
Rat went on composedly, picking herself up with a pleasant laugh.
"In or out of them, it doesn't matter. Nothing seems to really matter. That's the charm of it. Whether you get away or whether you don't. Whether you arrive at your destination or whether you reach somewhere else or whether you never get anywhere at all. You're always busy and you never do anything in particular. And when you've done it, there's always something else to do. And you can do it if you like, but you'd much better not. Look here, if you've really nothing else on hand this morning, supposing we drop down the river together and have a long day of it?
Mole waggled her toes from sheer happiness, let forth a sigh of full contentment, and leaned back blissfully into the soft cushions.
What a day I'm having,
she said.
Let us start at once.
Hold hard a minute then,
said Rat. She looped the painter through a ring in her landing stage, climbed up into her hole above, and after a short interval, reappeared staggering under a fat, wicker luncheon basket.
Slide that under your feet,
she observed to Mole as she passed it down into the boat. Then she untied the painter and took the skulls again.
What's inside it?
Asked Mole, wriggling with curiosity.
There's cold chicken inside it, replied Rat briefly. Cold tongue, cold ham, cold beef, pickled gherkins, salad, French rolls, cress sandwiches, spotted meat, ginger beer, lemonade, soda water.
Oh, stop,
cried Mole in ecstasies.
This is too much.
Do you really think so?
Inquired Rat seriously.
It's only what I always take on these little excursions. The other animals are always telling me that I'm a mean beast and cut it very fine.
Mole never heard a word she was saying. Absorbed in the new life she was entering upon, intoxicated with the sparkle, the ripple, the scents and the sounds and the sunlight, she trailed a paw in the water and dreamed long waking dreams. The water rat, considerate little being that she was, sculled steadily on and forbore to disturb her.
I like your clothes awfully, dear girl,
she remarked after some half an hour or so had passed.
Feminine, yet practical. I'm for trousers myself. Going to get a black velvet smoking suit someday, as soon as I can afford it.
I beg your pardon?
Said Mole, pulling herself together with an effort.
Sorry, you must think me very rude, but all this is so new to me. So, this is a river.
The river,
corrected Rat.
I live by it, and with it, and on it, and in it,
said Rat.
It's brother and sister to me. And aunts. And company. Oh, and food and drink. And naturally, washing. It's my world, and I don't want any other. What it hasn't got is not worth having, and what it doesn't know is not worth knowing. Lord, the times we've had together, whether in winter or summer, spring or autumn. It's always got its fun and its excitements. When the floods are on in February and my cellars and basements are brimming with drink that's no good to me and the brown water runs by my best bedroom window, or again, when it all drops away and shows patches of mud that smells like plum cake and the rushes and weed clog the channels and I can potter about dry-shod over most of the bed of it and find fresh food to eat and things careless people have dropped out of boats.
But isn't it a bit dull at times?
Mole ventured to ask.
Just you and the river, and no one else to pass a word with.
No one else to? Well, I mustn't be hard on you, dear,
said Rat with forbearance.
You're new to it, and of course you don't know. The bank is so crowded nowadays that many people are moving away altogether. Oh no, it isn't what it used to be at all. Otters, kingfishers, dab chicks, moorhens, all of them about all day long and always wanting you to do something, as if you had no business of your own to attend to.
What lies over there?
Asked Mole, waving a paw towards a background of woodland that darkly framed the water meadows on one side of the river.
That? Oh, that's just the wild wood,
said Rat shortly.
We don't go there very much, we river bankers.
Aren't they very nice people in there?
Said Mole, a trifle nervously.
Well,
replied Rat.
Let me see. The squirrels are all right. And the rabbits. Well, some of them. But rabbits are a mixed lot. And then there's Badger, of course. She lives right in the heart of it. Wouldn't live anywhere else either if you paid her to do it. Tough old girl. Grand Dame of the Woods. Nobody interferes with her. They'd better not,
she added significantly.
Why? Who should interfere with her?
Asked Mole.
Well, of course, there are others,
explained Rat in a hesitating sort of way.
Weasels. And stoats. And foxes. And so on. They're all right, in a way. I'm perfectly good friends with them. Pass the time of day when we meet and all that. But they break out sometimes. There's no denying it. And then, well, you can't really trust them. And that's the fact.
Mole knew well that it is quite against animal etiquette to dwell on possible trouble ahead, or even allude to it, so she dropped the subject.
And beyond the wild wood again?
She asked.
Where it's all blue and dim, and one sees what may be hills, or perhaps they mayn't, and something like the smoke of towns, or is it only cloud drift?
Beyond the wild wood comes the wide world,
said Rat.
And that's something that doesn't matter, either to you or me. I've never been there, and I'm never going, nor you either, if you've got any sense at all. Don't ever refer to it again, please. Now then, here's our backwater at last, where we're going to lunch.
Leaving the main stream, they now passed into what seemed at first sight like a little landlocked lake. Green turf sloped down to either edge. Brown, snaky tree roots gleamed below the surface of the quiet water, while ahead of them the silvery shoulder and foamy tumble of a weir, arm in arm with a restless dripping mill wheel that held up in its turn a grey gabled mill house, filled the air with a soothing murmur of sound, dull and smothery, yet with little clear voices speaking up cheerfully out of it at intervals. It was so very beautiful that Mole could only hold up both forepaws and gasp.
Oh my! Oh my! Oh my!
Rat brought the boat alongside the bank, made her fast, helped the tweed-skirted Mole safely ashore, and swung out the luncheon basket. Mole begged as a favour to be allowed to unpack it all by herself, and Rat was very pleased to indulge her and to stretch out at full length on the grass and rest, while her excited friend shook out the tablecloth and spread it, took out all the mysterious packets one by one and arranged their contents in due order, still gasping.
Oh my! Oh my!
At each fresh revelation. When all was ready, Rat said,
Now! Pitch in, dear girl!
And Mole was indeed very glad to obey, for she had started her spring cleaning at a very early hour that morning, as people will do, and had not paused for bite or sup. And she had been through a very great deal since that distant time, which now seemed so many days ago.
What are you looking at?
Said Rat presently, when the edge of their hunger was somewhat dulled and Mole's eyes were able to wander off the tablecloth a little.
I am looking,
said Mole,
at a streak of bubbles that I see travelling along the surface of the water. That is a thing that strikes me as funny.
Bubbles? Oh,
said Rat, and chirruped cheerily in an inviting sort of way. A broad, glistening muzzle showed itself above the edge of the bank, and the otter hauled herself out and shook the water from her coat.
Greedy beggars!
She observed, making for the provender.
Why didn't you invite me, Ratty?
This was an impromptu affair,
explained Rat.
By the way, my friend, Miss Mole.
Delighted, I'm sure,
said Otter, and the two animals were friends forthwith.
Such a rumpus everywhere,
continued Otter.
All the world seems out on the river today. I came up this backwater to try and get a moment's peace, and then stumble upon you two ladies. At least, I beg pardon, I don't exactly mean that, you know.
There was a rustle behind them, proceeding from a hedge wherein last year's leaves still clung thick, and a stripy head with high shoulders behind it peered forth on them.
Come on, dear Badger,
shouted Rat. Badger trotted forward a pace or two, then grunted,
Company.
And turned her back and disappeared from view.
That's just the sort of creature she is,
observed the disappointed Rat.
Simply hates society. Now we shan't see any more of her today. Well, tell us, who's out on the river?
Lady Toad's out for one, replied Otter, in her brand new wager boat, new togs, new everything.
The two animals looked at each other and laughed.
Lady Toad,
repeated Mole, her barely visible eyes widening with awe.
Oh, she's not really titled, of course, explained Otter. Just likes the ring of it. We play along, sometimes, but it's not always wise to indulge her extravagances.
Once it was nothing but sailing for Toad,
said Rat.
Then she tired of that and took to punting. Nothing would please her but to punt all day and every day, and a nice mess she made of it. Last year, it was houseboating, and we all had to go and stay with her in her houseboat and pretend we liked it. She was going to spend the rest of her life in a houseboat. It's all the same. Whatever she takes up, she gets tired of it and starts on something fresh.
Capital girl, too,
remarked Otter reflectively.
But no stability, especially in a boat.
From where they sat, they could get a glimpse of the main stream across the island that separated them. And just then, a wager boat flashed into view. The rower, a short, plump figure, splashing badly and rolling a good deal, but working her hardest. Rat stood up and hailed her. But Toad, for it was she, shook her head and settled sternly to her work.
She'll be out of the boat in a minute if she rolls like that,
said Rat, sitting down again.
Of course she will, chuckled Otter. Did I ever tell you that good story about Lady Toad and the lock keeper? It happened this way. Toad,
an errant mayfly, swerved unsteadily athwart the current in the intoxicated fashion affected by young bloods of mayflies seeing life. A swirl of water and a cloop, and the mayfly was visible no more. Neither was Otter. Mole looked down. The voice was still in her ears, but the turf whereon she had lounged was clearly vacant. Not an otter to be seen, as far as the distant horizon. But again, there was a streak of bubbles on the surface of the river. Rat hummed a tune, and Mole recollected that animal etiquette forbade any sort of comment on the sudden disappearance of one's friends at any moment, for any reason or no reason whatever.
Well, well,
said Rat.
I suppose we ought to be moving. I wonder which of us had better pack the luncheon basket.
She did not speak as if she was frightfully eager for the treat.
Oh, please let me,
said Mole. So, of course, Rat let her. Packing the basket was not quite such pleasant work as unpacking the basket. It never is. But Mole was bent on enjoying everything. And although just when she had got the basket packed and strapped up tightly, she saw a plate staring up at her from the grass, and when the job had been done again, Rat pointed out a fork, which anybody ought to have seen, and last of all, behold the mustard pot which she had been sitting on without knowing it, still, somehow, the thing got finished at last, without much loss of patience. The afternoon sun was getting low as Rat sculled gently homewards in a dreamy mood, murmuring poetry things over to herself and not paying much attention to Mole. But Mole was very full of lunch and self-satisfaction and pride and already quite at home in a boat, so she thought, and was getting a bit restless besides. And presently she said,
Ratty, please, I want to row now.
Rat shook her head with a smile.
Not yet, my dear. Wait till you've had a few lessons. It's not so easy as it looks.
Mole was quiet for a minute or two, but she began to feel more and more jealous of Rat, sculling so strongly and so easily along, and her pride began to whisper that she could do it every bit as well. She jumped up and seized the sculls so suddenly that Rat, who was gazing out over the water and saying more poetry things to herself, was taken by surprise and fell backwards off her seat with her legs in the air for the second time, while the triumphant Mole took her place and grabbed the sculls with entire confidence.
Stop it, you silly goose!
Cried Rat from the bottom of the boat.
You can't do it. You'll have us over.
Mole flung her sculls back with a flourish and made a great dig at the water. She missed the surface altogether. Oh. Her legs flew up above her head and she found herself lying on top of the prostrate Rat. Greatly alarmed, she made a grab at the side of the boat and the next moment, sploosh! Over went the boat and she found herself struggling in the river. Oh my, how cold the water was, and oh, how very wet it felt. How it sang in her ears as she went down, down, down. How bright and welcome the sun looked as she rose to the surface, coughing and spluttering. How black was her despair when she felt herself sinking again. Then a firm paw gripped her by the back of her neck. It was Rat, and she was evidently laughing. Mole could feel her laughing right down her arm and through her paw and so into her, Mole's neck. Rat got hold of a skull and propped it under Mole's arm. Then she did the same by the other side of her and, swimming behind, propelled the helpless animal to shore, helped her out and set her down on the bank, a squashy, pulpy lump of misery. When Rat had rubbed her down a bit and wrung some of the wet out of her, she said,
Now then, young lady, trot up and down the towing path as hard as you can till you're warm and dry again, while I dive for the luncheon basket.
So the dismal Mole, wet without and ashamed within, trotted about until she was fairly dry, while Rat plunged into the water again, recovered the boat, righted her, and made her fast, fetched her floating property to shore by degrees, and finally dived successfully for the luncheon basket and struggled to land with it. When all was ready for a start once more, Mole, limp and dejected, took her seat in the stern of the boat, and as they set off, she said in a low voice, broken with emotion,
Ratty, my generous friend, I am very sorry indeed for my foolish and ungrateful conduct. My heart quite fails me when I think how I might have lost that beautiful luncheon basket. Indeed, I have been a complete dolt and I know it. Will you overlook it this once and forgive me and let things go on as before?
That's all right, bless you,
responded Rat warmly.
What's a little wet to a water rat? I'm more in the water than out of it most days. Don't you think any more about it. And look here, I really think you had better come and stop with me for a little time. It's very plain and rough, you know, not like Lady Toad's house at all. But you haven't seen that yet. Still, I can make you comfortable. And I'll teach you to row and to swim. And you'll soon be as handy on the water as any of us.
Mole was so touched by her kind manner of speaking that she could find no voice to answer her, and she had to brush away a tear or two with the back of her paw. But Rat kindly looked in another direction, and presently Mole's spirits revived again, and she was even able to give some straight back talk to a couple of moorhens who were sniggering to each other about her bedraggled appearance. When they got home, Rat made a bright fire in the parlour and planted Mole in an armchair in front of it, having fetched down a dressing gown and slippers for her, and told her river stories till supper time. Very thrilling stories they were, too, to an earth-dwelling animal like Mole. Stories about weirs and sudden floods and leaping pike and steamers that flung hard bottles. At least, bottles were certainly flung, and from steamers, so presumably by them, and about herons and how particular they were whom they spoke to, and about adventures down drains and night fishings with otter, or excursions far afield with badger. Supper was a most cheerful meal. But very shortly afterwards, a terribly sleepy Mole had to be escorted upstairs by her considerate host to the best bedroom, where she soon laid her head on her pillow in great peace and contentment, knowing that her newfound friend, the river, was lapping the sill of her window. This day was only the first of many similar ones for the emancipated Mole, each of them longer and full of interest as the ripening summer moved onward. She learnt to swim and to row and entered into the joy of running water, and with her ear to the reed stem she caught, at intervals, something of what the wind went whispering so constantly among them.